Hello, this is Valra Pavaroskin, and you're listening to Cherry Jam.
Hello, and welcome to episode 28, series 5 of Cherry Jam. Myself, Ed Price, and Jim Harley. That's it this evening. We haven't got anybody else. First of all, just a quick congratulations again to Snowy for the birth of his daughter, Lottie. Congratulations, Snowy. That's why he's not on this evening, because he has zero brain power left. Russ and Lotta are otherwise engaged. But Jim and I will hopefully take you through what has been an eventful weekend in rugby in the Challenge and Champions Cups. We'll also talk about the Bristol game from last week and looking forward to next weekend and the quarterfinals of the European competitions. But we'll start, Jim, with last week and the Bristol game. You were the only member of the team, I think, to actually watch any of the game or the footage or anything like that live. I've subsequently sat through an extended highlights, which was fun. But we just wanted to cover off a few things, particularly after quite a encouraging first half, a very frustrating second half.
Yeah, I mean, I struggle enough sometimes when we record on a Sunday to remember a Sunday afternoon fixture. So for it to be over a week, I am going to be racking my brains for what actually happened. But it's like typical Gloucester, wasn't it? Like, showed some real glimpses of quality and then didn't do enough, shall we say, to come out on the winning side. There's an awful lot of positives, and I am, you know, forever the positive person and striving to look for it. But yeah, lots of good things, but I can't help. And that one thing that hasn't been mentioned in any of the post-match analysis, you know, and they talked about physicality, they talked about some defence, you know, bits and pieces. But for me, the one thing, certainly in the second half, we seemed petrified of Bristol doing what Bristol do very, very well, and kind of that counter-attack and offload, and the offload game. And I think our defence, certainly in the second half, we missed a huge amount of tackles. And I can put down those missed tackles to being too preoccupied with trying to stop the offload and having a hand. So you're sort of tackling with one hand, but with the other arm, you're up in that kind of the arm, shoulder, ball area to try and stop that. And I think it happened, you know, on a couple of occasions, and the tackle actually wasn't completed, and the player was able to just carry on running. So, yeah, we maybe stopped their offloading game. Unfortunately, we forgot to stop them. So I think that was kind of potentially where it went wrong. And annoyingly, it's another one of those games that we could have won it. We really could have won it. And it wasn't the kick tennis particularly. I think when we kicked, it was probably not particularly bad kicks. But Bristol just ran it back, and they ran it back with real intent. And very rarely did they get isolated and then, you know, sort of turnover or turnover penalty. So it would be great. And maybe we'll come on to it, because I know we would come on to it later as we talk about the Champions Cup from today. But there are teams out there with a squad not dislike Gloucester that play quite different rugby to Gloucester. And I think we could be, we're getting frustrated because we see how we could be and how we could play. So, yeah, hopefully it is just a little blip. I mean, we had a hell of a run, didn't we, of wins after a hell of a run of losses. It was unlikely that we were going to carry on through till, you know, all the way through to the end of the season in Tottenham without losing a game. So we've lost one, and it's about getting, you know, we've lost one now, but obviously we've won one again. Mm-hmm. It's about getting back on that bike and having another little good run of wins.
Yeah, I think really important to note that, you know, I think, well, to be fair, Lewis Ludlow responded to our tweet after the Bristol game. And, you know, hold my hand up. I wasn't there. I didn't see it. So I'm only getting from you guys the comments. He did correct us in saying that it wasn't kick tennis. It was individual mistakes. And I agreed with him. It wasn't kick tennis. Eventually, I agreed with him, I should say. We kicked the ball and Bristol just never kicked it back. And, you know, look, it happens. There are games I can list off a load of games where a player has run through and should have made the right decision and didn't. And then ultimately you've gone from a 28-7 lead to a 21-14 lead. These things happen, you know, those 14-point turnarounds are killers. But look,
yeah, I think, and that for me, it's easy to blame. Was it Freddie Clark that made
it? It was Freddie, unfortunately.
He's there, you know, eyes for the posts, running full gas. And what I'd say is Josh Hathaway, who was pretty much on his shoulder, you almost need to run in front. So you run ahead of the player so that they're in their eye line.
They're in the eye line, yeah.
To then drop back. So you kind of, you show yourself to that player, or you run behind and you make, you know, you have to run further and faster, but you put yourself in a position, because Max Malin's tackle was absolutely world-class.
Oh yeah. And then the turnover was incredible. I mean, you've got to praise the play as well.
It was a fantastic intercept. It should have been a try. It wasn't a try. It ended up being a try the other end. I'm pretty sure that the pick and go from the ruck, the player was in front of the ball, annoyed that didn't get looked at. But hey ho, it's fine margins, isn't it? And you want to get to a position where it's not fine margins, because you can have a couple of poor decisions. In fact, you look at La Rochelle, and they lost pool games on some. Yeah. You know, real tight decisions, didn't they? And where are they now? You know, they are into the quarterfinals. They scraped their way into the round of 16, and they've won that game, and now they're through. So you make your own luck sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, as I said, these things happen. It can't be based on one issue, one moment, one issue. It was just I think the second half, as you say, Jim, I really do agree with you. We seemed to be a little bit less intense in defence, or we were trying to target, as you said, that offload. Just happened to forget to tackle the bloke in the first place. I'm sure there's, you know, the defence last week, or sorry, last on Friday night, I should say, against Castro was significantly better. A few similar issues. There was a couple of incidents where, again, we kind of fell off tackles, but overall a much better display defensively. Just before we move on to the Castro game, we had a lovely little moment this afternoon, which 4 years we've been doing this podcast in just over a month's time, and after 4 years we've finally been blocked by Stephen Jones on Twitter. That's Stephen Jones, the rugby writer for the Times, not ex-Glenethley.
I'd say Ed, player. When you say we, It is the Cherry Jam account, but it is
yes,
you.
It's me, yes. But I'm going to use the collective we here. This is the royal we, and say that's we've been. The Cherry Jam account has been blocked by Stephen Jones for daring to suggest that Saracens may have cheated in the past, and that allowed them to compete at the highest level of European rugby. Shocking, really.
In his defence and in Saracens' defence,
yes.
I would say that if they were only playing in that competition,
they wouldn't have been cheating.
It wouldn't have been cheating.
No.
And it would have been fine.
Yes.
And if they want to join the French league system, then I'm sure we'd more than welcome that.
Mm.
But yeah, they do play in England, in the English Premiership, and therefore have to abide by the rules of that league, of that competition. So, funny one. And there's a lot of people that say we're still bitter about it. And yes, we are.
Yeah. Because we specifically lost out on a semi, on a final because of it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think we will forever be bitter. rugby supporters will forever be bitter over it, much like if you were beaten by Lance Armstrong and never got to wear the yellow jersey, but however many years later got it, which of course teams haven't got in this Saracens situation. Saracens still have a big trophy cabinet full of stuff. But, you know, if you miss your opportunity to be on that top step of the podium at the Olympics because of a drug cheat, and you get it in the post, you know, six months later, that's massive. You've missed out on sponsorship. You've missed out on that wonderful opportunity to celebrate success with your family and friends and teammates. There's huge, huge amounts of issues with it. And I don't think those people will ever, you know, that have been wronged, will ever truly get over it. But there we go. We do need to stop talking about it quite so much, because we need to focus on ourselves and our own progress.
Absolutely. And I agree with that entirely, Jim. My point, and I still make this point, is I will stop mentioning it. And I don't mention it very much at all, really. And actually, I am someone who feels that some supporters, certainly within the Gloucester supporter environment, are a little bit too obsessed with it. I mean, the thing we've got to remember about when all the stuff I'm putting out on Twitter from a Cherry Jam Twitter account is, it's meant to be fun, guys. It's not genuinely meant to be too serious. I mean, fair play to the Bath fan who was giving it back and forth with us yesterday on Twitter. Brilliant, really enjoyed that. And good luck in Bordeaux to that individual as well, who's going off to study there. So, you know, that's the fun bit of it. I just think I'll stop doing it when Saracens fans admit it, because that's the thing that really gets people up their backs up, is look, you did cheat, you got done for it, that's why you got relegated and had to pay a huge fine, and all those players went on loan, by the way. You did all of that. It doesn't change the fact that you're a good side now, you know, in the English League. It's just admit the fact that you cheated, and then everyone can move on. Every time you're salty and start getting a bit defensive about it, we'll just keep mentioning it because it's funny. Anyway, right, moving on to the Castro game. So, Gloucester played Castro the second time in this competition, back-to-back, which is weird. And again,
a lot of those repeat fixtures this weekend, weren't there?
Not the greatest look for the tournament overall, but a win for Gloucester. Into the quarterfinal of the Challenge Cup, a competition that we've, you know, historically done very well in, and we've now got a route to the final should we want to take it, which would mean we have a King's Own quarterfinal against Ospreys, and then a King's Own semi-final if we win that against either Benetton or Connacht. So they're the two sides we could meet in the semi, one of the two sides we could meet in the semi-finals. Jim, I thought again, very similar to the Bristol game, first half, apart from the first 5-6 minutes, a lot of control. We seem to be looking to play quite a lot of attacking rugby. Kicked it when we needed to. Wouldn't necessarily. We've always said no problems about kicking it. Good hands, good intensity in attack and defence. Really kind of controlled what Castro were doing. The Castro didn't offer a huge amount outside of set piece. And it seemed to be at that point, it's going to be a stroll in the park to a point. I think we were 21-10 up at halftime. Just to get your views on that first half, that first 40 minutes.
Yeah, I think, you know, there was a lot of chat, wasn't there? Obviously, we had a very, very good win against them previously. But this was a very different 22 that they brought. Yeah. You know, it was a very different squad. So we were expecting a different cast to turn up. And maybe they were a slightly stronger side, but I think they still certainly had that French attitude sometimes where they are not overly interested. And
yes,
what you need to do as a team that are facing that situation is go for the jugular. You need to absolutely destroy any hopes that this team have got of winning the game in 20 minutes. And take total control. And I felt we maybe didn't take some chances that we could have done. But generally speaking, you're right, Ed. The first half was a very controlled and measured and sensible 40 minutes of rugby, which you would think would frustrate that cash team and mean that, you know, the heads go down a little bit more. But actually, potentially we kind of left the door ajar, didn't we?
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I was a bit frustrated last 5 minutes of the first half. Again, look, we were playing some decent stuff. We were forcing errors from Castro. We were getting the ball out wide and really challenging them. I thought Ollie Thorley and Johnny May were superb on Friday night. Really, really played well. Took opportunities when they got them, but also got off, you know, involved themselves in the general play, which is something that you could maybe criticise Johnny May for not doing as much as we see him do for maybe England. But really good performance there. Great try by Johnny May. And you know, overall, happy for the, I say from about minute five to about minute 35, really good, strong Gloucester performance. The last 5 minutes, though, really sloppy and gave the Castro that opportunity for a penalty to make it 21-10, I think it was. And again, first 5 minutes, really sloppy. Obviously, Charlie Atkinson still bedding himself in at number 10. But again, as the game went on, we seemed to have a bit more confidence, which definitely fed into Charlie Atkinson's play. And then he got flatter and flatter and flatter, challenged that Castro line defensively, and it definitely improved our back play. I mean, I think the first 5-10 minutes he was too deep. He was just sort of shoveling it on. As soon as he got flatter and we had the confidence that he was going to take it to the Castro line, we looked a bit more of an interesting, it looked a bit far more interesting, exciting attacking line. The second half, and we'll lead on to your comments now, second half, again, first 5-10 minutes, we seemed to be okay. We're kind of getting back into the rhythm. There was a few interesting bits of play, probably could have taken a couple of opportunities. And then a bit like Bristol, a bit like other games this season, it's as if we've gone into, right, we're going to hold what we've got mode, and we're not really going to have that same level of attacking intent.
It's like an energy save mode.
Yeah.
Where you just go, oh, right, well, we've got to 55 minutes and we need to make sure that the final 15's good. So we'll just take it steady for 10, 20 minutes. Mm. And you can't do that. You know, certainly the standard of competition is going to be going up.
Yeah.
We need to be able to play high tempo for 80 minutes. And, you know, we've got a strong bench. We should be able to rotate players and maintain really, really high intensity, you know, energy levels. And yeah, just, it's frustrating. It's frustrating sometimes. And I think there's a couple of players that maybe aren't performing quite as well as they have done in the past. Whether they're carrying little niggly injuries or whether they're just not quite on the same wavelength as some of their teammates because they haven't played in those combinations, I'm not sure. And I just, yeah, I obviously hope that that things click and those players that, you know, are 60, 70% of where they have been get back to being what we know they can be.
Yeah, I mean, just a few players. As I mentioned, a good couple of good performances by a number of players. I thought that there weren't, I don't, again, it's weird, isn't it? How many times have we said this all the season? There, often it isn't the case of the players have played badly or there's players who haven't kind of hit what we expect. It's just collectively in certain periods of the game, we've fallen off a little bit in terms of the intensity, and that's allowed the opposition to get back into it or take advantage. I think, in all fairness, I think Santi Carreras would probably admit that he didn't have his strongest game at 15, but at the same time, slotted the points we needed to win the game. So we can't criticise him too much. I just felt at times, I think he was a little bit, he was not quite on the stage, you say, on the same wavelength as maybe some of the players around him in attack. And again, I think also we note that we praise Jamal so much on this pod because we love everything about him. And one of the benefits we do have of Jamal is because he's so versatile, either playing loose head or tight head, that, you know, it, probably for his frustration, he starts a lot of games on the bench. I thought he did struggle and he definitely got targeted coming on at tight head. on Friday night, a position he hasn't played a huge amount of this season. He's generally played loose head. And I felt that, yeah, they definitely targeted him. You know, he was getting it. He was in a bit of a spot of bother every so often in that second half. How much of that was legal, I don't know. I mean, that's another thing. I did hear a shout, but then
he's learning, isn't he? I mean, yeah, the French, it's not like they're renowned for being crap at scrummaging, is it?
No, I mean, I suppose you get carried away because the previous game Jamal had had them on toast. I mean, you know, he got player of the match in the previous game because he was absolutely ridiculous in the scrum. And they've obviously
and you can't expect players like that to have total dominance in scrum game after game after game, because they technically they'll come up against someone that does something like you say, Ed, maybe a little bit naughty, and you know, if they've done their research with the referee, bit of intel, they know that they can get away with something, or you know, they'll try all the tricks in the book. You know, if you've got an old head at prop, they will try some dark arts that, you know, even someone with Jamal's experience maybe is struggles to compete against.
Yeah. I mean, I heard shouts below me of around the hooker and the opposition front row were doing some nefarious acts. But obviously, you know, you're so many 30, 40 feet away, so it's difficult to judge. And let's be honest, you know, Castro would have gone away hurting, and they would have studied and they would have worked out maybe this is the weakness we can go for and all the rest of it. But I think overall, though, first of all, just another quick side of stake, just to say well done on Jamal getting 100 appearances. You know, it's a great achievement in this day and age. Now, what I would say as well, just on the performance of the on Friday night, pleasing again that, yeah, there was that horrible little moment with about 8 minutes to go. You thought, oh no, we're going to be here for another hour. I didn't ever feel we were going to lose. I just thought, oh, I don't want extra time. I just want to go and get.
You want to get back in the pelly, have another pint. Yeah,
go to the pelly again, have a pint. But I did feel that, yeah, it was good. It was pleasing to see that when they got it back within to seven points, we did sort of switch on again and secure the win. So that was good. Any mentions you wanted to make on players and individual performances? We've mentioned Ollie Thorley and Johnny May, and they, I think, deserve to be shouted out. But anybody else you wanted to sort of put in the positive column?
I'm going to be honest with you, Ed. Like I say, I struggle. I mean, a lot of what I remember from the Bristol game is because at the end of the European coverage this evening, they had like a TNT, lots of tries, well, lots of goals, boring, and then lots of tries.
Yeah.
And that reminded me of a couple of the ones from the Gloucester-Bristol game. And I think it's worth noting, I don't know what the viewing figures are for Viaplay, but I wouldn't imagine as many people watch it as they do if it's on TNT. I certainly don't have it as part of my subscription package. I think Russ may have paid a one-off fee, sort of thing, or he's got it for the month or something, which is going to turn out to be a good deal, because obviously he'll get the quarterfinal as well if it's a monthly thing. But yeah, normally the Challenge Cup is very much the ugly sister to the Champions Cup in the TNT coverage. And it's been frustrating. Gloucester have been in this position many, many times. And it's always been frustrating that games get covered, but it doesn't really get talked about. The highlight show that used to be on was a 3-hour long highlight show. And it was 2.5 hours of Heineken Cup highlights. And then it was half an hour of Parker Penn or whatever, you know, whatever the Challenge Cup was at the time. And I kind of, well, that's kind of fair enough, because that's where it sits. It's not as important. The rugby isn't quite as high a standard with, you know, lesser teams in lesser form. But what does frustrate me is that now the rights have gone. They barely even mention what the games were and what the fixtures are going to be. It's like literally a 30-second snippet, even when the Toulouse game feed went down and they had 20 minutes or so just to start waffling because they had nothing prepped. you think, well, that would be an ideal opportunity to start talking about some of the other competitions that maybe you haven't mentioned, but clearly they're not permitted to. Clearly it must be some form of embargo, because Viaplay have got all the deal with it. And I guess maybe TNT, or you know, BT previously, we had such a embarrassment, really, didn't we, that
yeah.
all the games were on. Kind of, you get used to, oh, Gloucester on the telly tonight. It's like, oh, actually, they're not. A bit like, you know, the Bristol game, because the Bristol game, even though it was a Friday night, wasn't it?
No, Bristol was a Saturday, and it was 3 o'clock
Saturday afternoon.
Saturday at 3.
Yeah. Saturday 3 o'clock, and it wasn't on the telly. And it was on, you know, Premier Rugby TV.
PLTV.
Which again is a great way to be able to see the rugby. I mean, I'm not sure what their figures are like. I would hope that they're, you know, making a few quid out of it. But obviously next year that's gone anyway, and we'll be even more annoyed because we're just expecting to see Gloucester on the telly every single week, and then when it comes to Challenge Cup, we might not be getting the airtime.
No, I agree with all of that. I think, from my understanding, again, I'm happy to be proved wrong, but I believe from quarterfinal stage onwards that the games are now going to be shown on TNT. So,
oh, the quarters are.
I believe so. Now, you can, don't quote me on that. I have just been messaged
a little graphic which confirms what we all knew. That Gloucester are playing Ospreys 8 o'clock kickoff on Friday the 12th.
Friday
and
evening,
actually,
yeah.
As I zoom in, it does say TNT Sports, S4C, Bein Sports, whatever the South African one is, and Fleur Rugby.
Yes.
So looking at that, obviously the Clermont Ulster game is not on TNT. That's France Sport.
Oh, there it is.
They've just moved it.
Yeah.
So all four are on TNT, and Flow Rugby, whatever that is, and Bein Sport, and the Sunday game, the Benetton Connacht game, obviously the team that will hopefully be playing in the semi final, that's on EPCR TV as well. So that may well be a free to air service, much like the kind of rugby championship that runs underneath the Six Nations is all kind of live streamed. So it may be that's free to air, which is brilliant if that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking. So just to quickly zip through the quarterfinals as they are. So we've got it'll be Gloucester versus Ospreys on the Friday night, Clermont versus Ulster on Saturday. You've then got Sharks versus Edinburgh,
And that's the same time. They're both at 1:30.
They're both at 1:30 on a Saturday. Now, yeah, that's weird. And then Sunday you've got Benetton versus Connacht. And obviously, as I said, the Benetton-Connacht game is the one that would interest Gloucester should we beat Ospreys on Friday night.
I did watch the last 10 minutes or so of the Ospreys Sale game, so I probably didn't get a huge judge on what they were like.
Two average sides, but I wouldn't, you know, you're comparing it to Gloucester, and I would say probably Gloucester, if we play to our best, I wouldn't be concerned. I don't think Ospreys offered a huge amount outside. I
mean, you watched the whole game, didn't you?
I watched most of the game. I think I missed the first 10 minutes of it. But the Ospreys played well. Sale were a poor Sale team. I mean, they made 9 changes. We were talking about it in the pub on Friday night about how they basically did a Bourgoin. They were like, we can't really arse with this. If we beat Ospreys, brilliant, but meh. It's difficult with Ospreys because they've got some really decent players in that squad, but they've been underperforming. They've had a bit of a decent run of late with a few good wins, but there's definitely areas you could target. I think I think certainly their scrum isn't necessarily up to much. I'm sure I'm going to regret saying that. You know, they've got some players that we all know of, like Tipperick and people like that. So they've got some dangerous players in the back row. It's a case of, I think, if Gloucester can manage it properly, play with it some attacking intent, I think we should have enough. But again, yeah, it's a we'll come on to it in a bit more.
Yeah, I think it's about the control, isn't it? And I think you know, having, as we've talked about, having that home quarterfinal and potential home semi-final, that is absolutely massive, because I think, especially for, you know, some of our younger, less experienced players like Atkinson, being at home, being in familiar surroundings, allows him maybe to just be that little bit more confident and get into the flow of things a little bit quicker than, you know, you can imagine if you were kind of in the south of France or South Africa, you know, all the travel of going to South Africa or something like that. It's going to be hugely disruptive.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the fixtures this weekend in the Champions Cup, there was only one away victory.
And that was very, very close to being a home win.
Incredibly close to being a home win. In the Challenge Cup, Friday and Saturday night, or Friday night and then obviously Saturday, it was all home wins. Today, Ulster really came out of nowhere. They were struggling a little bit against Montpellier to start with, but they ended up winning 40 points to 17 away to Montpellier. And Connor came back with a really good second half to beat Poe 40 points to 30 away. So but generally, as you said, that home advantage is so important, so massive. And it's rare that you see teams, you know, get turned over at home in these knockout stages. So it's a great opportunity for the lads, and hopefully we take it. Just on the other, because we'll talk about the rugby weekend more generally in a minute, but just on the other games that we're looking to be looking at here, Clermont versus Ulster. Clermont, obviously, as we saw earlier this season, aren't the same force they were. Ulster have had a bit of a struggle this season, but you know they'll be looking a week on from hammering Montpellier away.
Got quite a good success rate against Ulster, haven't we? We beat them in one of the, was that a COVID, was a knockout game or was that a pool game? I can't remember.
Ulster in the, that was a COVID pool stage win. It was the one where Barton went over in the last seconds.
I remember going to Ravenhill and winning. I think we've been to Ravenhill and lost. I think we've only played them
twice,
actually, properly, where we play home and away twice. And I think we won both the home games. So I think our success is pretty good. And then Clermont, we've only played them once, haven't we? And we've won that. So
that's the other side of the draw, should make a point of. That's the other side of the draw. But Clermont and Ulster, I mean, I would expect in the Marcel Michelin, you'd expect that Clermont will probably come out on top. They very rarely lose there.
It's funny, isn't it, with the French? You know, they definitely target the top 14, those teams that don't have the squads like Toulouse to be able to compete on both fronts. But yet, when they're at home, say for Bourgoin, maybe, they still, we'll win our three, you know, in the old school way of things, it was, we'll win our three home games and we won't really worry too much about the away games, because that is how the French league kind of works, isn't it? It's you win all your home games, that's a given, and then you pick up as many points on the road as possible. And they sort of take that mentality a little bit into Europe, I feel. But it will be very interesting, because you know they're two big teams with some, you know, serious history in the Champions Cup. So I don't think either of them have won the challenge. They've probably rarely been in it.
Clermont might have won it once back in the day. I think Clermont might have won it back in the old days. You then got in the other quarterfinals, you've got Hollywood Bets Sharks, worst name in rugby, just Sharks will be fine, versus Edinburgh Rugby. Now, Edinburgh, again, are a bit, I think, are very, very like Gloucester. They've got a superb team. You look at that team on paper and you think, how are you struggling so much in the league? They've got stars throughout. They've got Van der Merwe, et cetera, et cetera. It's a lot to ask, though, to go all the way down to South Africa and win away. That's going to be a real challenge.
And a real kind of logistical issue as well. I mean, you would think that EPCR are helping somewhat in that some sort of facilities have been kind of pre-booked or
I do wonder, because obviously Edinburgh Rugby are funded there, by the SRU though, aren't they? So it's probably a little bit different than that.
But I mean, still, like we're saying, tickets go on sale tomorrow as we record on Sunday night. So there is 4.5 days to buy tickets for the Gloucester match. And because it's Ospreys and they're only up the road,
yeah, that'll be easy enough.
Quite well, and sell a few tickets. Whereas for Edinburgh fans, you know, they've got an awful lot of organising to do. Like, because if I'm buying flights, I probably wouldn't want to do it until it's actually been confirmed, rather than, oh, I've heard someone's booked the ambulance for Friday night. It's definitely Friday night. Atkinson obviously confirmed it on Twitter, saying, I know you can't, but I can. It's Friday. Which is well done. Well done, Aki.
Yes, love that.
But it's, you know, and in fact, sort of watching the coverage, there was quite a few other people. I think Dowson might have mentioned something, you know, there's people saying, oh, and I hear that the game's going to be on, because obviously they've got word. But I mean, it's such a short turnaround. I heard that Ronan's taken his team to his old stomping grounds of Cork.
Yeah.
So, you know, La Rochelle are going to be basically in Ireland for the week, which makes perfect sense, you know, to rather than going back down to the south of France for what, like 3 days and then traveling back up. I don't know how much of that was pre-arranged, you know.
You'd
book
imagine
it, book it with booking.com on free cancellation or something.
I love the thought of Ronan O'Gara going onto his personal hotels.com or booking.com account and going, which one do we want? It's got the free cancellation. We'll have this one.
Yeah, and we'll book all the rooms in that for the
book now, pay later. That's what we want. That's what we want. That one. There we go.
Yeah, but I mean, it does, and this is the ridiculousness that we've talked about before of having South African teams in a European Cup. I really feel for those Edinburgh fans that no doubt would like to go. And actually, if it was a pool game,
yeah,
and they
that's
had
different, isn't it?
Months and months and months to plan for it. May well have gone, do you know what? This is going to be our big holiday this year. We're going to go and spend 10 days in South Africa. But yeah, that's going to be a tough one for Edinburgh, because I doubt they'll have much support.
No. Well, I mean, yeah, it's going to be nigh on impossible.
It's going to be tough anyway.
It's going to be tough anyway. And then you've got to, you're not going to have any supporters out there. I think there needs to be some serious consideration, certainly in the Challenge Cup. I think Champions Cup's a little bit different, but just because it's just the senior competition. But the Challenge Cup, I do think there has to be serious consideration that if a South African side does qualify for the knockout stages, a home draw seems a bit excessive, and maybe there could be some way that you can look at it and doing it from a European venue. I know that Cheetahs were playing in Amsterdam, for example, in the group stage.
Because, you know, like you say, Edinburgh are bankrolled by the SRU, who don't have an unlimited pot of money. If it was Gloucester, they'd be like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
That's going to cost us a small fortune to fly the squad.
That's that 300 grand loss we made last year. Yeah, we've got to
It may well be, you know, I know they charter flights to go to, you know, France.
Or Georgia. I mean,
Georgia.
You know, Georgia was
Georgia wasn't
example.
Cheap, was it?
No.
So, although, actually, when you're in Georgia, things are cheap.
Yes. So, I think it's similar to South Africa, really, because it's fairly cheap over there if you're British. But it's not ideal, is it? Let's be honest. I mean, you're right. I think it's going to be a tough one for Edinburgh. Just the final one of the weekends, the one, you know, I think the most intriguing for two reasons. Obviously, if Gloucester do succeed and beat Ospreys on the Friday, they will be playing the winners of this tie. But that's Benetton and Connacht. Benetton are now basically the Italian national side, with the notable exception of Stephen Varney and a couple of others. But, you know, that is a very good side. They're towards the top of the URC. They are consistently beating very good URC sides. They beat the Lions in South African side in Italy. So that's no small achievement. And now they've got a Connacht team, which you've got some decent players. You've got Bundy Aki. You've got loads of those Irish players that are kind of on the fringes of the senior team. Both very good sides. Both, whoever, if Gloucester do meet one of those sides, that's going to be a real challenge in a semi-final. And actually, I think that's going to be a really tough one to call, the Benetton-Connacht game, because Benetton probably previously have never had to think about URC too much.
Yeah, so they're actually fighting on two fronts, aren't they?
For the first time probably ever. And that'll be an interesting dynamic. I would imagine if it's Benetton, look, this is your one-off, this is a really good opportunity to win a trophy and do something that no Italian side has ever done before, which is to get to the final of a major tournament. They got to the semi-finals last year, got nailed by Toulon, who ended up obviously winning the whole thing. So it's going to be a very interesting game, that. And that, obviously, we're hoping Gloucester have got some interest in who wins it. But either or of those teams will be a really good challenge for Gloucester in a semi-final.
And we've played them both before and had really good games against them in the past. Obviously, yes. History doesn't really count because that was years ago in different squads. But I'm jumping massively forward.
Go ahead.
Now,
it's fine.
But have they like confirmed that they're going back to like sensible pools and doing it properly next year yet?
I think we've got one more year of this. I'm pretty sure. I'll have to double check this, but I'm pretty sure we've got.
I do remember hearing at some point this that they're keeping it for a year. I was hoping that was last year, but I just yeah, oh, just such a bonkers system.
It is, yeah. I'm hoping that they do go. I mean, look, every fan definitely wants to go back to the old pool system. The clubs, ironically, probably prefer this current system because of the way it distributes money and the rest of it. But we'll see. I mean, it's for English clubs, it doesn't have as much of an impact, say, the French or the URC, just the size of the leagues that they're having to play in. So I'm not really expecting any change.
I'm really looking forward to next season because in the past 12 months, my youngest, I don't talk to my eldest anymore after putting him to bed earlier. We won't talk about that. But my youngest, who has loved playing rugby since he was six, now like watched rugby all day with me yesterday. Like he absolutely loves watching rugby now and he's learning so much. And I've promised him that I'll take him to France to watch Gloucester next year. So I just really want us to go somewhere decent.
Yeah, it would be nice. It would be nice. I mean, I think, look, unless we win the Challenge Cup, it's going to be in the Challenge Cup, unfortunately. But
yeah, which potentially means somewhere a bit different, but it's kind of smaller cities, isn't it? Smaller clubs.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, it was funny. I was thinking just before we move on to the chat, so the sort of rest of the weekend and we break for a little bit. But I was watching the Bordeaux Saracens game.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, how the bloody hell did we beat Bordeaux? And that was only last year. That's the thing. My brain was kind of going, yeah, that was January last year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, different Bordeaux side, I have to be honest. It was a different Bordeaux side.
Different Bordeaux side, and Bordeaux, much like Toulouse and Stade Rochelais, you know, they are like a serious squad. They have got so many top players, and they are vying to get the top 14 and the Champions Cup. You know, they are one of those few teams, you know, like your Munster in the past, maybe, and you know your Leinster, that have more than enough class to be able to just keep churning out incredibly strong squads every single week.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to pause and we're going to talk about this weekend's Champions Cup fixtures and results, because there were some absolutely brilliant games of rugby. And Bath lost.
Hi, this is Chris Harris, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
Right. Let's start with, I think, the game of the weekend, which was Northampton-Munster. If you haven't seen it, dear listeners, do catch up on the highlights, because it's what I want rugby to always be like. It was absolutely brilliant. You had two sides willing and wanting to play attacking and exciting brand of rugby. There was kicking. I'm not going to dispute there wasn't kicking. There was definitely kicking, but there was an intent to try and do something a little bit different to unlock two very good defences. And Northampton scored some brilliant tries. Munster scored an absolute couple of belters as well. Just what you want and what European rugby, Champions Cup rugby is all about. And that's the sort of level of Gloucester we've got to aim at.
I think the quality of rugby, it's been talked about many, many times. You know, Champions Cup rugby is just, it's just sitting underneath international test level. And that game was absolutely as intense, as skillful, the quality level of anything we've seen in the Six Nations. Two teams, like you said, it wasn't all out attack. There was a little bit of kind of chess being played. There was some sensible play. But my goodness me, when it was on, I mean, some of the offloading was just ridiculous. And not Sonny Bill Williams ridiculous, just kind of really controlled. And I love the fact that we've now got big men that can also find a gap rather than steamroller over someone. And you kind of just got that blend of, it's not all about collisions, but obviously, you know, that is a significant part of top level rugby. But yeah, very, very entertaining game. And you would hope that kind of after a Six Nations, and you know, you get your occasional fans, I don't really speak to people that don't like rugby, I don't really like them, but but I'd love to know kind of what their reasoning would be for not tuning in and watching a game like that, because there's plenty of people that watch like really dire football matches all the time.
Hello.
And how can you not be entertained by I think in a way, actually, like your Champions Cup weekend, there's maybe too much rugby.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of, you've got 1 o'clock kickoff through to 8 o'clock kickoff or whatever, you know, can do the whole day. And I'll do that and I'll love every game. And sometimes it'll be, oh, I'll get the tablet up or I'll do whatever, you know, and so we can have two games, you know, split screen and all that. But yeah, because there was obviously lots of under 18 Six Nations and I think under 20 Six Nations as well, wasn't
there?
So there's just too much rugby this weekend to actually watch. But yeah, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful example of what rugby could be. And kind of as I was saying earlier, we keep talking about how far along, like the journey we are and our progression and all that. And I think actually, are Northampton further along that development than us, or are they just doing it better?
Well, you think of the coaches only came in what, 2 years ago. It's a young team. Don't be wrong, they've got some old stages there, but you look at that back line and it's a young team. And you know, Ram, Freeman, Dingwall, Odin Dahl, they got from Wasps, obviously Slytone, Finn Smith. It's not peppered yet with internationals. There's these guys on the sort of fringes of just started to come onto the scene. And then you think, oh, bloody hell, like, you know, they're playing. I think it's just style of rugby, fundamentally. It's coaching, number one. The coaching is, they're clearly well coached.
I think Dowson, who's obviously relatively young
in
a sort of director position, but I think Sam Vesti, I think it's the difference. It's the difference, I think, in having a back as your head coach compared to having a forward. And it's just that mentality sometimes where backs want to attack and forwards want to defend and control. And I think they've just got the balance. I mean, they might end up coming runner-up in the Premiership final and not getting anywhere in the Champions Cup, but they're looking like the best team in England at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would just on your point about forward coaches being more defensive and or forward. I would say though, under Graham Rowntree, Munster are playing a really exciting game of rugby, brand of rugby as well, and you know they definitely added to the game today. And I, you know, they were a bit unlucky on a few little bounces of the ball here and there. There was a, but they definitely are playing something very exciting. Not necessarily just archetypal Munster game, which was very much forward orientated. And then when we bulldozed everybody, we'll get the ball out. I mean, I think the two tries today came from that style, but the build up to that point was very good attacking and lots of flair. Zeebo had a great game, as he often does. And obviously Crowley at 10 controlling things played well. So lots of, you know, as I say, there were lots of good things about that particular game. One of the other games I thought worth picking out, we mentioned it already, was the Stormers La Rochelle game, because Stormers were what, 16 points to nil up at half time,
and yeah, they had a hell of a start.
They did.
La Rochelle hadn't got off the bus.
No, and what we found over the last couple of years, Leinster fans, to their cost twice, is that unless you bury La Rochelle, they will come back, because they just have so much power. They got away with it though, Jim, as we kind of alluded to.
Yeah,
it was a gale force, blowy wind in the stadium down in Cape Town, and it that's probably what ultimately cost the Stormers.
Yeah, I mean that final conversion. I think it could have been very, very easily 5 meters nearer the posts.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised. I thought in the build-up, in commentary, they were talking about how important the conversion was, and they seemed to be keeping it quite narrow.
Yeah.
And they weren't straying much more than 5 meters either side of the posts, which I think possibly kind of La Rochelle kind of read and said they were defending narrow, and that's potentially how the try was scored, because the defence became a bit narrow and then they went wide. But in that situation, you know, to win the game, when you cross the try line, you have got to understand the importance of the kick and you've got to understand the importance of gaining every extra millimetre for your kicker and not risk getting carried over the dead ball line because you've, you know, got silly greedy, but give it full gas all the way in field and dive and put the ball down at the last moment. Because the kick, it wasn't a bad kick. And I think there must have been a bit of a gust. I'd love to know what the wind was doing during the kick, because it looked good. And then it just drifted to the left, didn't it?
Yeah.
Went straight across the front of the posts and ended up, I think, probably crossing the try line 10, 20 metres to the left. I mean, it was a long way off in the end.
Mm. To be fair, though, La Rochelle missed a couple of very kickable penalties, including one in the first half where, until Finn Smith's attempt today, Astoy's attempt yesterday was probably worst kick of the year. Yeah, just with La Rochelle, they're clearly struggling in the league. I think they're mid-table in the league at the moment. They're not hitting the straps they did the last couple of years. But in Champions Cup, they just seem to have, again, they're just turning it up at the right time. Now, whether or not they'll have enough against Leinster, who, although ended up being quite comfortable against Leicester, again,
they didn't look amazing, did they?
No, I think defensively they seem to be a little bit underpowered defensively. Made a lot of mistakes. One thing I would say, they were always so comfortable that you get the feeling that they're trying stuff that they probably wouldn't necessarily try in a tighter match, and therefore mistakes were made, and Leicester, to be fair to him, pounced on those mistakes. But you know, a creditable performance by Leicester, who I think we'll all agree, I mean, we said last week we couldn't see how they were gonna win, and they started off like a rocket, couldn't maintain it. kind of got back into it in the second half. But as soon as he got back into it, Leinster just went, oh no, we've got to win this game of rugby. Hang on, pass, 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 try. And that's that always there, that ability Leinster have got. They've just, they can turn the switch, really, can't they?
They can turn it on. They've got, oh, ridiculous. They were like two players, was it, in their entire squad that weren't internationals? You know, and they will be. They're just quite young yet and haven't been picked, I think. But it's interesting. There's a lot of talk about the revenge and, you know, obviously being beaten in the last two finals and things like that. And I think it'd be really interesting to see how it plays out, because it could go one or two. For me, it'll go one or two ways. It'll either go Leinster will try and overplay, because they'll be so focused on revenge, they'll forget what they're trying to achieve. And La Rochelle will just do their normal thing and not worry about being 10 points down and then end up winning. Or it will just be like, oh my God, this is the Leinster that we haven't actually seen for a little while. Wow. And they'll just, I think it'll either be close. It'll be a close La Rochelle win. Or, and I think probably more likely, I think Leinster by 20 or something like that. I think there's a really good chance that if in the first 10 minutes Leinster start scoring tries and like really showing what they can do, I can see it being a pretty hard day in the office, because it'll just motivate the Leinster players, you know, that they've been hurt by this team the past 2 years. And then hopefully someone else can beat them in a later round.
So, it's as I kind of referenced before, I'm not going to be at the game on Friday night because I'm actually in Dublin on a pre-planned lads weekend. So, fingers crossed, all being well, tomorrow afternoon I'll be able to get tickets for me and a couple of mates to go and watch this game in Dublin. So, international correspondent next week, I'll actually be able to tell you about how this game unfolded, which I'm looking forward to.
Any idea what ticket prices are going to be like that? Are they relatively sensible?
I think they're relatively sensible. I looked yesterday just to get a feel for it, because I thought, oh, well, if Leinster beat Leicester, there's going to be tickets available. And there was, 32,000, I think, there yesterday at the Aviva. And they were going, you could buy tickets on the day for about 50 quid. And they were decent tickets. They were good tickets. You know, they weren't sort of behind the post or anything. So I'm assuming sensibly priced. I don't know offhand. I'm going to have to check tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because
of course, as we look at it, I'm currently on the website trying to have a look, and they haven't put the Ospreys tickets on for sale yet. I know tickets go on sale
tomorrow. Yeah,
they go on sale tomorrow, so they're not even showing as like a pending.
No.
So the fact I haven't seen a tweet or an email, I don't know if you have, Ed, of any details.
No,
they
so the only
must
thing I
still
have,
be fine tuning what they're going to do price wise, because, like I said, it's 4.5 days to sell the tickets.
Yeah,
you've got. I mean, I can't remember how much I paid for the cash tickets, but I paid
£19 plus booking fees. What was that, £20.50? Yeah.
So it's mine. They weren't overly expensive compared to a standard Premiership game, because it's an all pay event. And I would suggest it will be something similar for this, although it's, you know, quarter final rather than round of 16, simply because you can't afford to have people sitting on the fence a little bit and going, oh, I'm not sure if I'm going to go. You need to just sell those tickets. You've got such little time to do it.
It's a big bonus. It's a bonus fixture, isn't it, for Gloucester? And there's another bonus. But the difference is this week is it's you've only got a week turnaround. The semi-final, should we get there, is May 3rd, 4th, 5th. It's that weekend. So you've then got basically 3 weeks to sell those tickets, and you can do it.
And I don't think anyone would expect to have, expect to be getting a shed ticket for 16, 20 quid, whatever, for a semi-final. I think that would understandably be sort of tier one kind of pricing.
Yeah. You'd be looking maybe equivalent to the Premiership final as for ticket prices, as I think this would be a decent shout. So it was like 25 quid or whatever it was on the day. Just on the sort of the ticketing and stuff, I believe season ticket holders, you've got your ticket reserved till Wednesday. I think that's the only thing I have seen that the club confirm. I would assume, my guess would be similar levels of pricing. I think if you do 19 quid for silver grandstand like I am, 16 quid, whatever it was for you, 15 quid for you as a shed, I think that seems to be sensible. I think you can yeah. live with that on a short
I've got
turnaround.
A big shopping list. I've got to buy tickets because Emma can't log in to buy her own tickets. She really struggles.
That's a whole other...
whereas, because I've got my membership number written down and my phone remembers it all, I can kind of log in relatively easily. But I've got, I'm planning on buying tickets for my son and a load of his mates. They all want to come. So it's going to be, hopefully, another really, really good kind of... And I've definitely noticed, actually, the last few games around me in the shed, there's a lot of different faces.
Yes.
A lot of, the occasional fans that maybe you see Christmas and Easter games, they're maybe coming to these additional one-off games. So it's a real good opportunity for the club to put on a little bit more... put on a little bit more and do a little bit more and try and get more people in the ground. And I am aware of the club just employing some new people. There's a new team that has just been formed, if you like, at Gloucester Rugby, to do with kind of community engagement and stuff like that. And because a chap I know has got a job in it, so I'm going to obviously try and get some more information about that and what that team are going to do and what that might mean for the club and the community, whether it means more access to events and things like that, coaching at King's Home and things like that for junior clubs and things like that. That'd be great.
Yeah.
It's a big promo, you know,
absolutely.
The likes of Bendek, you know, getting their sponsorship seen more. We've got all the European kit that was being sold off cheap. It's going to have another run out. It's great for the club that we're getting extra games and getting extra games at home. I mean, goodness, you can't help but win.
No, exactly. Yeah, and that's why I always got very frustrated when we didn't take European competitions are seriously. I think, yeah, Champions Cup, we get it. You know, you've got to pick and choose. But the home games are really important. You've got to go for them. And you've got to try and go as far as you possibly can and treat the competition with the respect it deserves. Look, regardless of whether it's the Challenge Cup or the Champions Cup, silverware is silverware, wins are wins, and home games are home games. It's really important for the club. Just a couple of other final ones to talk about in terms of this weekend. Quinns narrowly beat Glasgow. A bit of controversy around some of the decisions around in that game. I can't get too excited, if I'm honest, because I think, Quinns have got a very good side. They've got players that can turn it on at any given opportunity. I think they're going to probably struggle in the next round, but we'll come on to that in a second. A good win for today for Toulouse over Racing. Toulouse 31-7. Racing clearly not taking Champions Cup seriously this year. They qualified for the knockout stages, I think, with the last player of the game in their knockout in their last group game, and they're top 14. That's obviously clearly where they want to focus. We've already kind of referenced Bordeaux Saracens. Just on that Bordeaux Saracens game, Bordeaux, wow. As we kind of already mentioned, Jim, I mean, like, different level entirely. I mean, they've put over 100 points on Saracens now in two games, which is ridiculously, because I think Saracens tried themselves.
Saracens were trying.
Saracens put, I mean, I know they had a couple of injuries and stuff, but Saracens put out there basically their best side they could put out, and they got absolutely hammered.
I think we might be seeing, and obviously, Northampton gave Saracens a good beating the other week. We've got the Vunipolas look to be off. Obviously, Farrell's
Farrell's
off.
going, yeah.
There's definitely a big changing of the guard situation at Saracens, and that's not to say they haven't got some good youngsters coming through because they
Yeah.
have, but I think Saracens have lost their kind of their invincibility a little
Yeah,
bit,
that
and I think,
aura, yeah.
yeah, and I think just looking at the English League, I think there's going to be a lot more change. I think there's going to be teams that, like Northampton at the moment, are doing really, really well. But I think it will be, I think going forward, I think we're going to have a couple of years of it being a lot tighter and a lot of teams beating each other and, a lot more bounce the ball, in a semi-final, in a final. I think it's going to be a lot closer. And I think realistically, English teams aren't going to be competing in the Champions Cup in the latter stages for a good few years now.
No, I mean, you know, it.
I mean, Northampton are, and
Yes.
Northampton have, the ability potentially to win it. I don't think they will,
No.
but I think if Northampton try and do the double, they'll probably end up winning neither. I don't think they've got a strong enough squad to be able to compete on both. And I think, we might see for a few years teams concentrating on one or the other, whereas in the past they've been able to concentrate on both.
Yeah, I mean, just talking about the Premiership quickly. You look at second, who is currently Bath, and seventh, Leicester. It's 5 points between those teams. Like it's so tight. Like, you know, Northampton have won 10 games, then Bath, Saracens, Quins, Bristol, Exeter, Leicester, Sale have all won 8 games. It's bonus points is the difference.
Yeah,
Gloucester
and
then
that's
on
what it'll come
four.
down to. That's what it'll come
Yeah.
down to. That'll be the difference between finishing second and finishing fifth.
Or
That
I mean,
that'll be.
this is the difference. At the moment, is the difference between finishing second and eighth, which is
Yeah.
mental.
So, yeah, it is ridiculous, and I think that's where teams that are trying to do well in European rugby, they will not get that fourth try. They will let an opposition team get within seven. They will not dominate as much as they could because they're trying to rest players. So those players that maybe would have done 70 or 80 minutes are being pulled off after 55 or 60, and they're just not. It's brilliant. It's brilliant for the neutral. And I, like I was sort of saying before, I really hope that some of those Six Nations fans get involved. I love the way, I don't know whether it's a TNT thing or whether it's a Premier Rugby thing. I get the branding seems to be Premier Rugby. They're kind of referring to it as the run-in, and I
Yes.
think it's a really, really, because it's not the playoffs. The playoffs are actually a very small bit. There's two
It's three
semi-finals
it's
and a
three
final.
games, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like in American sport where the playoffs are kind of go
Or
on and
even
on and on.
French. I mean, the French playoffs are very odd. They've got their barrage, whatever it's called. It's very odd. It's a very convoluted system in which there's certain teams get byes and all sorts. But
Yeah,
yeah,
a bit
I
like the
know.
rugby league. Yeah,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I agree with you that yeah.
it's I just think if that's what rugby needs. I mean, rugby needs money. At the end of the day, it needs more money, and the way to get more money is to get more people interested in it. And the standard of it is great. So, if we can get more people watching it, more people enjoying it, more people investing in it, then that's all for the good of the game. And the quality's there, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Final one to just quickly cover off. Going back quickly to the quarters. Sorry, to the last 16. And it is the funniest one of the weekend. Exeter beat Bath 21-15. And it's just hilarious because Bath, I think, thought they'd probably done the job because they had that gale force wind
Yeah.
blowing into their faces. And you
Hell of a
thought,
first half.
yeah,
Hell of a first half from him.
and you thought, well, Exeter are going to have to do something special here. And what was really funny was they didn't really have to do anything special. Bath kind of let them into it. And then Exeter did what a lot of Exeter teams have done recently, which is just grind a result out and just do enough. Bath really, really probably, I think it's a massive opportunity miss for Bath. And obviously I know that they've lost Finn Russell as well from injury. That could be huge for the rest of the season. You know, think of how tight that league is, as you mentioned. And just another note to say, that's another year, boys. You've only got one competition left to win, and that could be another year. Those cobwebs are getting very, very thick, aren't they? Anyway,
terribly unlucky for Bath that obviously they lost Finn Russell, and then they lost Orlando as well. So they kind of lost both their playmakers. Which I think you probably struggle to plan and practice for.
I thought Spencer played really well, though.
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to show what quality he's got.
Yeah, exactly.
That he can drop into that position and play so well. And you know, you can imagine if we had, you know, Engerfield having to play at 10, I think he would struggle. Not because he's not a skillful rugby player, but because he just doesn't have the years of playing and understand, you know, and just that ability. And I think Spencer he's been around a little while, and he kind of, he was able to fill in fantastically well. I think it's really difficult especially for a nine, to not play at nine. You know, if you're on the wing or if you're at 10, because of, you know, injuries and substitutions and stuff. I think it's so, so difficult to remember what your job is and not get drawn in to continue playing.
Yeah, to leave the ruck alone, so to speak. Yeah,
and leave it for the other guy with 21 on his back or whatever it might be, you know, and go, right, no, I need to stay in this position or stay in that position. So, I mean, I'm not sure it was the best game in the world.
It wasn't. The weather, I mean, to be fair, it was always going to be a tight affair. Two English sides, you know, very equally matched probably if you look at the two squads. The standouts, Faye Wabosso, wow, again. Like that.
Every single time, wasn't it? He got the ball.
He's just a ridiculous player. And the ability to just get over the game line every single time is remarkable.
But in defence, I still think he's a big issue, a big liability in defence. I still think that a few times he just looks like almost AWOL in defence. He just looks like he doesn't know where he's supposed to be or whether to go in. Whether, you know, like in a ruck, he doesn't know whether he needs to jump in, whether he needs to jump in at nine, or whether he needs to stay out and cover the blind side. I still think he's got a huge amount to learn in defence. But my God, in attack, like, he has absolutely no right to make the distance he does. He's in traffic. I mean, that one run,
yeah,
he broke about 18 tackles, didn't he?
Well, it's and just keeps powering, and that's what he reminds me. He reminds me of Marcel Garvey, but even more step, which is like mental to think about.
Yeah, I think Marcel was an exceptionally powerful kind of almost like a sprinter, wasn't he? He had hugely powerful legs and big, you know, big strong arms to sort of carry on the drive, if you like, of the acceleration. And that's what Marcel was great at, just pulling away from almost a standing start. And I think Emmanuel's a little bit different because he has got the step, but he's also got... So he steps, accelerates, steps, accelerates, steps, accelerates. And so many players think they've got him. And because they think they've got him, their teammates think the tackle's made, so they're staying off him a little bit and looking for the potential offload, and then he's not been caught and he's gone, and really, really exciting to watch. And yeah, I hope he keeps improving because obviously he's
English now,
so we've got him.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, I think in attack particularly, a lot of rugby intelligence. I agree with you, defensively still quite naive, but that will come. You know, he's still young, he's gonna that'll develop, and you expect, certainly the more he plays high level, top level rugby, international rugby, he's going to only improve. Before we kind of finish off, so obviously this Friday, Ospreys at home, you know, get yourself down there. Obviously, get your tickets, get yourself down. Let's make it loud. I'm pretty sure Ospreys will bring a fair amount with them. They're a good punch, and obviously it's Lance returning.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll be pushing it.
He is already pushing the ticket sales. Yeah, he is already.
And I'm sure he's really looking forward to meeting up with some familiar faces. That's what playing teams that you don't play all the time. You know, I mean, goodness, I can't remember the last time we played Ospreys. Was that
I think just
in Marshall days?
I think the last time we played Ospreys in something that mattered was the Heineken Cup, and we beat them in the pool stage. I think that was that one when 2007 maybe.
I can remember just a long Marshall time ago in the rain.
I remember.
I don't know how or why.
No, I remember. I remember Sinbad scoring. Or Tyndall scoring, one of the two, us beating them at King's Home in quite a big game. That was the one. I think we played them a couple of times in the Cup more recently, yeah. But nothing.
I remember going to the Liberty Stadium.
I was at uni and I got absolutely soaked and we got thumped. That was an early memory. Not ideal, but yeah, let's see. I'm hoping well, Gloucester just turn up, please. If Gloucester turn up and play the way I think we know they can play, I think we should have more than enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Play to their ability, and we should be the team.
Should be there. I'll just finish though on the final bits, which is around the quarterfinals. We've done the Challenge Cup. We might as well quickly do the quarterfinals of the Champions Cup. You just tell me who you think is going to win. Bordeaux Bergler versus Harlequins.
Bordeaux.
Yeah. Northampton versus Bulls. That is a difficult. Bulls hammered Lyon.
Yeah, I think just because of home advantage, I think Northampton will control it well enough.
Yeah.
And come through that one.
Toulouse Exeter. I think we probably guess which one that one might be.
I think Toulouse are probably going to win that relatively comfortably.
Yeah. And then the final one we've kind of mentioned already, Leinster La Rochelle. What's your thoughts?
I'm going to go for a Leinster comprehensive win.
I'm going to go for a nervy Leinster win. I think Leinster will probably have enough, and I think it will be quite close. They'll have a mild panic, and then La Rochelle will knock it on.
Okay. Yeah, and then overall, I mean, goodness, it's Bordeaux, Toulouse, Leinster or La Rochelle, either of those teams.
And then Northampton or Bulls. They are...
I think the winner of the Northampton Bulls game will probably lose the semi-final.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. I mean, you look at... You know that there's a different level in competition, and you look at those sides and you think, Christ almighty, if Gloucester kept it below 50, we'd be happy. I think, but with the exception probably of Exeter, I think all of those teams, you think, phew... We might struggle there. I've got a feeling it's going to be a Toulouse or a Bordeaux winner overall, but we'll know more next week. Jim, thank you so much. Appreciate it. We've gone way over what I thought we were going to do, but this is what happens when it's just us two. We will reconvene next week. I will have an in-depth report of how much Guinness I would have drunk in Dublin. Jim, you can tell me all of the different beers you've drunk in the Pelican.
Yep.
And hopefully a couple of the other lads will be able to join us as well.
Marvellous.
Cheers.
Ta-da.